Hey, everybody, this is Chris Kenner, and we've also got Jason England here. And I am here to ask Jason some questions on the bottom deal. Now, Jason is one of the guys that I kind of helped him a lot with the bottom deal. So the interesting thing is a lot of these questions are questions I have pestered him about over the years. And I don't ask them once. I usually ask them
hundreds of times.
Right. So I'm just going to start off with a very simple question is, how did you get started with the bottom deal and kind of why?
I'm not exactly sure why I was attracted to the gambling sites very early on, but I can tell you what happened after I started asking the right people the right questions. The first thing that I did was I went to a gentleman that I know you know from Memphis, Tennessee, named Jim Surprise.
Oh, very much, Jim, very good
unfortunately
guy.
No longer with us, but I approached him at the Atlanta Harvest of Magic.
Pause 1 second there. Jim's real name was James William Surprise.
Surprise.
His
right.
real name is Jim Will Surprise. Okay.
Okay. So I approached Jim at one of the Atlanta Harvest of Magic conventions in the late 80s or maybe 1990. And I said, Jim, I want to know about the bottom deal. And Jim said, well, I'm the wrong guy to ask, but you're in luck. The right guy to ask is sitting right over there on that couch. And I turn around, and that was the first time I ever laid eyes on a guy named Gary Plants, who you also know
I know
well.
Very well, yeah.
Jim took me over. He introduced me to Gary, and Gary proceeded to show me about, seems like, 50 things.
Stop right there. Gary's middle name.
Yeah, really.
No, it's Will. Gary Will Plant. No, it's not. But Jim's name is Jim Will Surprise.
That's right. So I walk over, I meet Gary Plants. He showed me what seems like must have been 50 different things you can do with the bottom deal. I never saw any of them. You know, I never saw the bottom deal because he's one of the best in the world. And I was hooked. And I spoke to, probably talked to him that entire weekend there at the conference. And he pointed me in a couple of directions that I'm extremely thankful for and that I got a lot of information out of. One are the Steve Forte videotapes. And two, the Martin Nash trilogy. Gary, even though the bottom deal isn't a big part of the Nash trilogy, Gary showed me a lot of great stuff from the Nash trilogy, and it was something that I appreciate. And I went from there.
Yeah, Gary is, oh my gosh, Gary. If you don't know who Gary is the man. Anything Gary puts out or does is always great.
Yeah.
Always great. So speaking of, you know, Gary being a great bottom dealer, who are the other best, the great bottom dealers you've seen? Because I know that you have definitely been around and seen them all. So who are the top-notch guys?
As far as overall bottom dealing expertise goes, Gary is right up there. Now, obviously, I've never sat down with, you know, the guys I consider to be the top four or five and
Gary,
them compete. But
Gary's not per se a real gambler. That's like a magician doing magic tricks.
He's a magician doing magic tricks, but I tell you what, if he wanted to have a real gambler's bottom deal, it would not take him any time at all to just change from, you know, dealing onto the table, which magicians do if they're doing a stop trick or something like that, to sailing the cards around a poker table. It wouldn't take him 30 seconds to make that transition. But he's certainly up there. I mean, he's easily top five, maybe higher. Of course, Steve Forte, I think, is overall the best card handler I've ever seen in my life.
For sure.
But, you know, Steve's not a magician. He couldn't, you know, he's not the best guy to talk to about an Elmsley count or the best guy to talk to about a double lift. But when it comes to things like false deals and push-through shuffles and things of that nature, he has a touch that's, you know, unlike anything I've ever seen.
I agree.
Way up there. Richard Turner is a fantastic bottom deal guy. You know, Richard tries to do 1,000 moves extremely well. And when it comes to just doing a massive variety of moves, he's definitely right up there. I still say that you know, that Richard's bottom is as good as almost any bottom I've ever seen. When he's really in stroke and he wants to beat you with the bottom deal, he's as good as anybody I've ever seen. Darwin Ortiz, I think, has a great bottom deal from the grip that he uses. Darwin uses a modified Erdnase grip, which is a grip that I didn't like early on, but it's one that I have actually grown to like more and more.
Steve uses kind of a modified.
Which is amazing
that he does that.
Yep, so, absolutely, so. He does. And there's a couple other guys out there that do great bottom deals, but those guys are probably, you know, the big ones. Steve, Gary, Richard Turner. And Darwin are probably, you know, some
Kalush
of those guys.
Is probably up there too.
Bill Kalush is up there. There's a kid from Florida that a lot of people don't know named Aaron Shields. Has a phenomenal bottom deal.
Oh yeah! Oh my God! Yeah, yeah. From Philly or Pittsburgh. Right?
Yeah, something like that. I think he lives in Florida now.
He's got that weird snapback thing too.
I don't know what that is, but okay. But yeah, he's got a phenomenal bottom deal. I remember seeing it. You know, I'm sure there are other names that I'm leaving off of here, but those are the guys that come to mind right away. Mike Zapek's got a great bottom deal. You know, this is a kid from here in town.
The ironic thing to me is that all these people live within 10 minutes of me.
Yeah,
like three of them that live within 10 minutes of,
basically.
Of me.
So those are the biggies that come to mind. And if you said, you know, track down great bottom dealing information, I would say you need, in addition to the classic texts, you need to try to track down these guys and get close to them and ask them to show you what they know, because they're great at it.
Do you know the one thing that always haunts me the most? And I mean, you know me very well. You know that I sit and play with bottom deals a lot. And technique wise, it's the sound that is the killer.
Okay.
I think the sound is that when that sound is different, it just is the. So are you supposed to match your regular deal to the sound of the bottom deal, or do you try to make your bottom deal sound like your regular deal? What's your thought on this whole thing?
Well, I'll tell you what. I agree that in the circumstances where you're practicing bottom deals, it's important, because you're practicing bottom deals typically in a situation where you can actually hear it. I will say that in a poker game setting, or in a bar setting, if you're a bar magician, clearly it doesn't really matter, because no one can tell a difference anyway. Unless the sound difference is, you know, completely night and day, then you may have to deal with it in some way. But as a magician, I do think it's important to try to make that sound match. Now, the question that you just sort of posed is, do you make the top sound like the bottoms, or do you struggle to make the bottoms sound like the tops? And I guess at the end of the day, it probably doesn't matter. However you achieve a similarity in sound, I mean, who really cares how you got there? I will say this, it's probably easier to make the tops sound like the bottoms. To put a little more, you know, snap, crackle, and pop into the card as it comes off the top of the deck is probably easier than to make the bottoms sound like the tops. So, you know, I don't know, maybe you should split the difference there. Maybe you should add a little bit of sound to the top deals, all the while trying to deaden the sound coming off the bottom deal. One other thing I would say is that I'm a big believer in trying to soften up your take. And Richard Turner is probably one of the best I've ever seen.
When the cards gets pulled off the bottom.
Yeah, soften up the take in the sense that when the bottom card is coming off, the lighter you're holding the rest of the deck, the more it tends to deaden sound.
Yes, because this is true with almost anything.
With almost anything,
almost
yeah.
Any good side.
Absolutely.
Of hand. Coins even.
Absolutely. And the reason for that is if the deck can sort of move and move around and shift in your hand, it has a tendency to absorb the energy that would otherwise produce sound. So there's still a little bit of sound there, but the lighter you're holding those cards, the more you allow them to move and shift and sort of float in your hand, the less likely you'll have sound issues. Now, that's a pretty lofty goal, and it's very difficult to do, but that's what I've discovered over, you know, 20 years of fooling with this move.
Well, that brings me to practicing. I mean, you have any drills to practice? Because I think I've tried many things, and it can't just be doing one drill, because I run into the problem is sometimes I need to do the bottom deal as the sixth card, the fifth card, the third card.
Sure, sure.
If I get used to doing it only in a dealing out hands, I get in that rhythm and I can't do it any other thing.
I'll tell you what,
you're the one that made me change
sure.
that.
I fell into that trap when I was first learning to deal the bottom. I was great at dealing the bottom to myself. But if you asked me to deal the bottom to the first player to my left, I was lost, because I was taking the bottom card to the right, but then I had to change directions and deal it either over the top of the deck or underneath the deck, and I had to deal it to like a player sitting to my immediate left. And when I realized that I was bad at any time I needed to deal the bottom card to someone to my left, I started inventing drills where I would deal entire rounds. A lot of my bottom dealing practice, I would deal an entire round of nothing but bottoms to the guys sitting to my left. What would it be, you know, like a poker table to the one seat, the two seat, the three seat. This is going around clockwise from the dealer's left. And so then those evolved into drills where I never bothered to take four aces and put them on the bottom of the deck. I would just deal whatever random cards were there. But I would start off by, I would deal a round of cards, and I would deal the four cards off the bottom to the person in the one seat to my left. Then I'd gather everything up and do it to the two seat, and then gather everything up and do it to the three seat. And I would go all the way around an imaginary eight seat poker table, always dealing to whatever person was next on the list. And it taught me to be comfortable dealing to any direction, any position. And then other things I would do, I think that's a really good drill. Another thing I would do, something that's difficult, is I would practice dealing bottoms one right after another. So practice multiple bottoms. If you can deal five or six bottoms off the bottom of the deck consecutively,
It's very difficult to do.
It's very difficult to do because your rhythm gets interrupted. So, you know, whatever was difficult, that's the kind of stuff I sort of gravitated to. Another thing, alternating top, bottom, top, bottom, top, bottom, top, bottom, is much harder to do than most people think. If you can master that, then dealing one bottom to a person in a magic setting or dealing a couple of bottoms to a player sitting in, you know, the five seat in a, you know, in a gambling expose setting, those things become child's play. So I naturally gravitated towards whatever the most difficult drill I could think of. And it's probably consecutive bottoms, although there's a few other really quirky, difficult drills that I can think of. But I'm a big believer in drills.
In the use of a trick, I've played with doing it. If someone says, the simplest, boldest trick you can do with it is, you deal down, and when they say stop, you deal the bottom.
Correct.
That's very difficult. Because your mindset has to be, you know, there's no preparation of knowing when that time is going to come.
Nope, you're absolutely right.
Or if you ask someone, give me a number from 1 to 10, and they say 5. You have to deal the bottom card as the 5th card. That, to me, is very difficult. And that's something that I've had to overcome. And you actually helped me with that by having me take number value of playing cards and lay them out on the table and just turn one over and go, okay, 3. Now I deal the 3rd card as the bottom. 5, deal the 5th card. So I didn't know.
Yep.
I could do it by myself and not make up the number in my head. So it would be very random.
For the stop trick that you just mentioned where you say, I'm going to deal bottoms, and when you say stop, I'll stop. There's a great way to practice that. And you take a red deck of cards, and you put a black dot or something directly in the center of one of the cards. And then you shuffle that deck up so that you know it's somewhere near the middle, but you're not exactly sure where it is. And then you hold the deck like you're going to deal bottoms, and you immediately start dealing through the cards as fast as you possibly can. And the beauty about having that spot in the middle of the deck is you won't see it coming like you would if you put a blue card in a red deck.
You'll see that
blue card coming a couple of cards away, and you're mentally able to get prepared. But if the dot is right in the middle of the card, you have no time to get ready for it. And what it does is it teaches you to immediately deal a bottom with only the tiniest bit of prep time, you know, mental preparation time. The only thing better than this would be to have an actual person
tell you the number, right,
telling you to stop or something like that.
I've never heard that method. That's a great idea.
It's a really good way to practice that. You know, if you can't have a buddy say, okay, stop, then that's the second best thing I can think of, is to figure out a way to replicate as closely as possible someone saying stop but giving you no lead time whatsoever.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now, do you have any, like, good tricks or things using the bottom deal? And not just tricks that you have to learn in some obscure book, something that in general people could find somewhere.
I'll tell you one that isn't an obscure book, but I'll just tell you what it is. It's a trick that Darwin Ortiz actually turned me on to in the Annotated Erdnase. He doesn't describe the trick, but he mentions that there's this great trick in print, and it's in a book that's not particularly easy to find, and it's a very old book, and it's in a Laurie Ireland book. I'm trying to remember what the Ireland manuscript is right off the top of my head. I'll think about it here in a second. But what it is a card is controlled, a selected card is controlled to second from the bottom. Okay, second card from the bottom. And you ask the spectator to name a number. And when you do, you sort of point at them and you allow them to see the bottom card. And subliminally, in their mind, the card is not on the bottom of the deck, clearly, but, you know, you're not doing this overtly. You just let them see that bottom card. They give you a number. Let's say they give you a number like 17, and you begin dealing down 17 to the 17th card, and somewhere in that range, you throw in a bottom deal. Okay, so let's say on the 12th card, I throw in a bottom deal. Well, that gets rid of the bottom card that they saw. And now on the 17th card, I actually deal another bottom, and it's their card off the bottom of the deck. And of course, you just casually shuffle the deck or cut it or what have you. But it allows them to think, well, the
card... It's very subtle and direct at the same time.
Yeah, it's direct, and yet there's one layer of smoke. And I love tricks that have a layer of smoke that almost registers on a subliminal level.
Right.
And I think that's a great trick for it.
Well, something that, you know, mentioning this trick that you just described, it's amazing to me because you described that as such a simple trick. It's a simple effect. It's a direct trick. That kind of effect, a lot of people would blow that trick off. You could build that trick up to be a miracle.
Absolutely.
I mean, it is a miracle. When you get this, when you can do this, these moves and do this right, that is an absolute miracle.
I tell you what, if you have a great bottom palm in your vocabulary or toolbox, if you will, imagine, I don't really do this, but imagine if you allowed someone to select a card, You controlled it to second from the bottom, and you either copped using a gambler's cop or bottom palmed those two cards, set the deck down, or allowed the spectator to shuffle it. And you let them shuffle till their heart's content. You take the deck back. You add those two cards back. You give them the glimpse of the bottom card as you ask them to name a number. And then you perform this trick. It's not the kind of thing that's going to fool another magician.
That's a miracle.
It is a miracle. To a layperson that doesn't understand how these moves work,
well, let's be honest,
that
that'll
is
fool
a miracle.
Most magicians.
Well, okay, fair enough. But
most magicians are...
It's not going to fool you, and it's not going to fool me, and it's not going to fool anyone conversant with heavy-duty sleight of hand.
Unless Steve does it.
Well, that's true. But it's the kind of thing that a layperson would look at that and have no idea how that was accomplished. It's really unfathomable because there's so many layers of smoke there. You know, even if they understand the concept of a bottom deal, they saw the bottom card, and they can't figure out how the card would have even gotten to the bottom
right.
in the first place because the palm takes that method away from them.
Right. It's a total canceling.
Yeah, everything cancels everything out. So that's just one example. There are others. I'll tell you this. I won't tell you tricks, but I'll tell you names. If you like the bottom deal, you need to go back to the guy that started me off, Gary Plants. Gary has tricks in print using the bottom deal. Some of them were published in Steve Beam's Trapdoor magazine back in the 80s and 90s. There's stuff in Precursor. There's a lot of stuff. I believe there's stuff of Gary's in Minotaur. There's a lot of Gary Plant's stuff using the bottom deal out there. But the other thing you need to do is you need to cut into Gary Plant's if you ever see him at a convention. You know, he's a big...
He's a machine.
He's unbelievable.
He's a machine.
I think Gary's... first of all, he's very approachable.
He's super nice.
For those of you that don't know, Gary makes some of the finest gaffed cards in existence. And Gary is usually at the TAOM conventions. He occasionally comes to some of the larger conventions. He's a great guy, very approachable. You need to track him down and ask him. But anyway, that's just an example of someone that does have phenomenal bottom dealing tricks in print.
Are there other finesses or little tips that most people miss? Like little things that can help that may not, you know, obviously, another thing actually, while we're talking about this is size of hands. It doesn't really matter. I don't have big hands, and I mean, I can do a pretty decent bottom deal.
Anyone that thinks that size of hands matters, I have two words for: Steve Freeman.
Oh yeah, he's got midget fingers.
Right? End of discussion. Yeah, he's not a big guy. He's got very small hands. He does phenomenal work. End of discussion. Small hands do not prevent you from doing great work. Do they hurt? You know, is it nice to have big hands? Sure, it's nice to have big hands. It probably helps. I don't deny that. But Steve Freeman has, undersized hands to be generous, and he does absolutely beautiful work. So,
oh yeah, everything Steve
does
is good.
I mean, he's phenomenal.
Midget hands.
Very nice.
Smell like cabbage. Oh God.
Next.
Gypsy. Small hands smell like cabbage. No, Steve's awesome.
Steve, if you're listening to this,
he won't be. Trust me.
That's Chris Kenner talking, not me.
he's it's not cerebral enough. what other kind of... Oh, hey, you know, I've got another interesting question, just for my own curiosity. You know, what are your goals with the Theory 11 videos? I mean, what are your kind of goals? Because, I mean, is it to kind of give these youth... Because it's kind of one of my goals, is to give the youth kind of... We're like the old guys, you know? It's kind
sure.
Of,
what's your
kind of goal? Yeah, I agree.
What are my goals with the Theory 11 videos? Well, one of the things that... When you and JB approached me about doing some of these moves, the first thing that popped into my head is, what am I going to add? You know, all of this stuff has been in print. It's been in print in a million different sources. I guess I do have touches on the bottom deal, but I can't talk to you about touches on the bottom deal unless you've spent, you know, years on the bottom deal yourself. I mean, I can't tell a beginner, hey, here's 15 finesses on a bottom deal if they don't even have...
Correct.
If they don't have that base level understanding, then my finesses, you know, don't mean anything to them. But the more I thought about it, the more I realized that one of the things that I can bring to the table, so to speak, is my background in teaching. You know, I was an instructor in the military for 4 years, and I don't mean teaching people how to take hills and shoot machine guns. I mean, I was in a classroom. I was breaking
you're
down.
You're good at that too, though. Like.
Breaking down very technical information from the world of satellite and space operations, and we had to make it understandable. So I think I've got a good grasp on what are the big picture concepts that people need to learn if they're going to learn a bottom deal or a second deal or a push-through shuffle. The other thing that I could do is that I do have most of these sources. You know, I've got 600 magic books at home, and they're all on cards. I don't, you know, if you asked me to come up with cups and balls sources, I'd probably point you to three or four from my library, and that's about it. If you ask me for bottom dealing sources, I can give you 200. So one of the things that that I'm pretty good at is culling through these large amounts of information that other people may not have access to, understanding it, and then condensing it into a 30-minute video for Theory 11. Is everything I know about the bottom deal in that 30-minute video? Of course not. But the big picture items, the things that are most important to give you that foundational understanding, they're absolutely in there. So that's sort of my goal, is to try to make difficult sleight of hand as easy as possible, given the circumstances.
You know, I've watched you and Derek over the past couple of years. Derek Delgadio.
Oh, okay.
I've watched
that
you
was
and,
a joke.
Yeah, I get it. I watched you and Derek Delgadio do something that I've only seen really Steve do, Steve Forty.
Okay.
And that's, like, incredible center deals. And you kind of, from the time I've known you, didn't really do center deals. Or you didn't do them like you do now, that's for sure. And you guys have really taken that to, like, a really understanding kind of simple level. I mean, it's incredible. How was that process of learning? I mean, because you got kind of created that whole thing at the same time, I think.
Well, I tell you what, it's really funny. Derek and I have come full circle as far as the center deal goes. I've been practicing it the whole time you've known me.
Correct. I practiced a center deal
right.
25 years ago.
Sure. I'll tell you what, though. I don't fully understand them myself. I'm still trying to learn these processes. But I had some center deal breakthroughs, if for lack of a better word,
I understand
in the last three or four years. And believe it or not, even though I probably was the first person that ever showed Derek a center deal, and I know I turned him on to the Steve Forty videos and the Richard Turner videos and stuff like that. So it's weird. You know, he got his basic center dealing technique from me. And then, I don't know, sometime in the past two or three years, he showed me something with the center deal that he had come up with on his own. And it kind of opened up a whole new world of center dealing smoothness that I had been struggling with for, you know, the past, 16 or 17 years. We don't necessarily have to go into it here.
No, I understand. But it's just that process of it's just doing it all the time and playing with
doing it constantly. I'll tell you what.
The thing that I think that I'm basically trying to get at is, and I know this from watching you, because your bottom deals are so amazing. And same with Steve. Steve mm-hmm. still practices. It's like
Absolutely. Amazing.
That you never stop practicing. It can always be better. Always. Always, always, always.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I'll tell you what, a common question you get on the internet forums, and even in person sometimes, and I get emails, is, what is, Jason, I'm trying to learn the bottom deal. What is the best bottom deal to learn? And my response is always exactly the same. There's no such thing. There is no best bottom deal. There's no best false shuffle. There's no best second deal or center deal. There's no best top palm. What there are best bottom deals given a certain set of circumstances.
Right.
And best center deals given a certain set of circumstances, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know a bottom deal. I know about seven or eight different, fundamentally different bottom deals. And right. I work on all of them. Some of them I work on more than others, but I work on all of them. And I use the one that fits the situation the best. I assure you, if you hand me a beat up deck of paper cards, I'm going to probably deal a different bottom deal with those cards than I will a brand new deck of plastic cards, for instance.
Chem cards,
yeah. I mean, the fundamentals may be the same, but there are touches and finesses that are different depending on the condition of the deck, depending on the size of the deck. You know, most chem cards, not all, but most of them that you run across are bridge size. They feel different. They move different. And I think that...
And they're very difficult.
They're a pain in the butt to switch to.
For a long time, when Rod... Uh-huh. Rod the Hop, he started doing all this stuff. He would only use these plastics.
Yep.
You know. And it was the first time I heard him referred to as plastics.
Right.
You know, I go with the plastics. I got to practice with the plastics. I do it with the papers, but I got to do it with the plastics
too.
That's my impersonation of Rod, which is pretty dead on. Actually.
And in his world, he's absolutely right. He has to be, you know, has to be able to use those cards because that's what they use in the poker rooms.
So the next day I went out and bought some chem cards and man, it was
probably hated them the first 30 seconds.
But then I still pull them out every once in a while, at least once a month. I'll have a deck of chems in my hand and I'll play with the table pharaohs.
Sure.
And,
sure. Yeah, he does that beautiful beautiful table pharaoh right out of Sharps and Flats.
Yeah,
he does it as well as anybody I've ever seen. Maybe better than anyone else I've ever seen. Yeah. But no, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's not sufficient. If you want to have a bottom deal that you can use in a magic trick, fine. Learn one, be done with it. But if you want to be a world class bottom dealer that's conversant with a variety of techniques, you have to learn from different sources. You've got to try different things. You have to constantly experiment. And I'm a big believer in figuring out a way to make your life difficult in practice so that nothing that a performance throws at you will ever faze you. I'm constantly practicing the bottom deal with a deck of 72 cards.
Yeah, I would practice with multiple decks of cards, which I think is... I put an extra, like a deck and a half.
Well, for me, 20 cards I found is great. I put 20 extra cards on the bottom of the deck, and I usually just grab, 20 red cards, put them on the bottom of a blue deck so I don't get the cards mixed up. But then I'll sit there and I'll only deal bottoms from those 20 extra cards. And what this does is it's like swinging a heavy bat when you're standing in the batter's box. Or when you're standing in the on-deck circle at a baseball game.
Filling your zombie with sand.
Right? Exactly. It feels lighter, even though it's not. When you pick up a deck of 52 cards, that's normal. But if you're used to dealing from a heavy deck, then when you get a normal deck, it feels so much easier to deal bottoms. It's also a good technique for the pass, by the way, to practice doing the pass with a deck of about 72 cards versus 52 cards. It's just a really, really good drill. Something I don't talk about much because I figure most people know it, and the ones that don't, maybe they shouldn't know it. I don't know. But it's a great drill.
Well, one last thing, and then we should wrap this up.
Okay.
And that is something that this is just like a pet peeve of mine, and I'm sure it's a pet peeve of anybody that plays with any kind of gambling move or bottom deal especially.
Mm-hmm.
So many times I will have people tell me, oh, yeah, I've mastered the bottom. I do a great bottom deal. I do the bottom deal. And it looks like they're typing a book underneath there with their fingers. There's so much finger movement. And that's one thing that I don't think we've touched on here, and that's how important it is to keep those lower fingers still. And what do you do do you have any practice technique to keep your fingers from opening up so much? Because that's one thing that people, they'll do, since you're looking down on the deck, you don't see that your fingers are flaring open.
Right.
And that it's just like you might as well have a red flag come up every time that you do a bottom deal.
Well, the first thing I would point out is that, remember all the guys I mentioned earlier that have phenomenal bottom deals, Gary Plants, Darwin Ortiz, Richard Turner, Steve Forte, the list goes on and on, you name it. Every single one of those guys has a little bit of finger flutter. Every one of them. Steve Forte's got it, Darwin Ortiz has got it, Richard Turner's got it, Gary Plants has got it, I've got it, you've got it.
Right.
Everyone that deals bottoms has a tiny bit of finger flutter. Unless you're talking about dealing a bottom from a pack of,
six cards
or 10 cards. But you deal a bottom from a deck of 52 cards, I don't care who you are, there's a tiny bit of finger flutter there. So the real question is not how can we get rid of it, because it seems to me like you
can't
minimize
it.
How do you minimize it? And the answer is, I don't know. And I'm not trying to be flippant with that kind of response. I mean, the truth is, how do you minimize it? That's the real question. Because how I minimize it using a mechanics grip might be completely different from the way a Darwin Ortiz minimizes it.
Or my mental process might be different than your mental process.
Yeah, exactly. So I can only tell you I can give you some broad strokes, but the point is you're going to have to take them and apply it to your bottom.
Well, I think the point is I'm trying to make is... that you need to be aware of the finger.
Yeah, you should be. First of all, you got to know that you're doing it. You got to be cognizant of it. One thing that I think you can do, and this works from almost any grip, is the fingers that are giving you the most trouble. Usually, not always. I'm speaking in broad terms here, but they're usually the third finger on the left hand and the pinky. Those are usually the ones that have to get out of the way the most. Occasionally, the second finger. Again, depending on what grip you're using. The best way to minimize that finger flutter that I can give you is to try to hold the cards in such a way that those fingers are already straight under the deck as much as possible.
Which is a tip Gary gave me years ago. Years and years and years ago.
That's probably the biggest tip, is if they're already straight, then they don't need to straighten out much more. You know, if those two fingers, the third finger and the second finger, if they're already 95% straightened, then you get only a 5% little flutter of movement when the bottom card is taken off. And we can deal with that. You know, we can minimize a 5% flutter. If they're halfway curled and you've got a 50% flutter, that's going to be much harder to camouflage. So that'd be the first tip, is to, you know, try your best to minimize that flutter. The other thing that I can tell you is to try to hold the deck in such a way that those fingers don't need to move at all. If you're doing a strike bottom deal from a modified Erdnase grip, one of the things
this is how Steve taught this to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Steve Forney taught me this.
Absolutely, and he got it from a guy, I won't mention his real name because he's still alive, but a real hustler whose initials are JB. It is not, by the way, the big JB that's mentioned on Steve's videotapes. That's a different guy. But there's a real hustler that taught Steve to hold the deck pretty high in the hand in a modified Erdnase grip. And, you know, he had this whole practice regimen that he went into. And it works great. I wish I had learned that, you know, 20 years ago, because I would have...
I had to reteach myself the Erdnase.
Yeah, I struggled a long time with it.
I retaught myself the Erdnase bottom deal because of that.
But, yeah, if you're doing a strike bottom deal, then you can pretty much hold the third and fourth fingers. You can hold them straight and out of the way the whole time you're dealing.
Yeah, Kalush does. I think Kalush's fingers might not even be touching the deck.
Maybe not.
Because he does the same exact technique.
Yeah, you know, it's a great thing. If you can do it, it's great. I don't know that I would change my dealing technique to that technique necessarily.
Right.
But if you can do it naturally without losing anything anywhere else, it's a good thing to do.
Well, it's also good to know multiple deals. I mean,
absolutely.
I play with obviously the Erdnase grip and the, you know, mechanics grip. So
one thing I would like to say, since you brought up the Erdnase grip, is I do not deal bottoms from the original Erdnase grip, and I don't know anyone that does.
It's always modified.
It's always modified in some way. However, I will say that if you're new to the bottom deal, if you've never tried it before, it's a great place to start, even though it's not necessarily a great place to end. I think you should absolutely throw open the expert at the card table, and you should learn from that grip, because there are lessons embedded in that grip that have application further down the road. Even though you will move away from that grip as you get better and better with the bottom deal, it's still probably the first place I would tell a new person to the bottom deal to begin. And then you would slowly start to make those changes that we talked about on the video. You would change to the modified grip. You would eventually, if you want to, you can change to a modified grip where you're dealing a strike like Gene Mays used to, which was he was such a great guy. He's another guy that I would put on my bottom deal list.
Gene was
such a sweet guy and dealt. I was with Gene, you know, in the last 2 years of his life because he lived 15 minutes from me in Santa Maria, California. And he never lost that. He always, even in the last couple of years, he always had a great bottom deal. And he dealt from that grip that enabled a strike bottom. He had almost no finger flutter because his fingers were already straight under the deck, and they didn't have to do any of those breakoff techniques. So kind of a roundabout way to answer that question, but I hope there's good information
in
there.
I think we've got to wrap this up. So I will say one last thing, and I think you'll agree with me on this, and that is if you need to learn the technique for the bottom deal, I mean, I would suggest, Jason's video from Theory 11, but another thing that you don't want to do, no matter where you learn it, you have to be very careful of just looking up bottom deal on YouTube, because there's a lot of bad and misinformation out there.
There is some bad and misinformation.
Really
out there.
Look at it from the sources and the places that Jason just talked about. Use those first, and then maybe go to the internet and look up bottom deal to see what not to do.
Right.
Because you're going to learn more about what not to do than you are about what to do.
Sure.
Because if you watch the bottom deal on YouTube and you see it's pretty atrocious what's out there.
Well, I think YouTube is a useful but dangerous tool.
Yes.
If you know what you're doing and you can navigate some of the better magic videos or dealing videos or what have you on YouTube, you can learn from it. But if you don't know what you're doing, if you're a beginner, I would say stay away from YouTube. Watch it for fun like we all do and get a good laugh out of it. But don't really try to learn anything from a YouTube video, because you never know what the credentials of the person claiming to be a good teacher are. You know, maybe it's a 13-year-old kid and all you're seeing is his hands and he doesn't know what he's doing anyway. Maybe it's a guy that's been doing it for 40 years and knows exactly what he's doing. But if you can't make that determination...
Or he did it 40 years and has bad technique.
Yeah, or it has bad technique.
Which is going to be a lot of the time.
But if you can't make that determination because you're also a beginner, I would stick with tried and true sources from people that are acknowledged experts the world over.
I totally agree. So, that's it. This is Chris Kenner and Jason England. This is just me asking Jason some questions on the bottom deal. So that's it, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks a lot.